Culture Man Children, PCMC. Across from me is the bearded one.
Hi.
The magnetic messiah, Mr. Emilio J. Sparks.
And right in front of me is the sexual intellectual.
Mm-hmm.
The man who spent $60 on some weird-looking Darth Vader toy.
It's exclusive from Lego.
Whatever makes you sleep at night. Ladies and gentlemen, I am with the wonderful hazel-eyed bandit who stole my heart, Mike Bongiorno.
You know, in direct sunlight, my eyes are a shimmering emerald. But mostly they look hazel, that's true. That's what it says on the license plate. We have a guest as well today.
Oh, yeah? Who do we have?
Have you ever listened to the award-winning podcast Anytime with Vin Forte?
I've heard of it.
You've heard of it?
I heard of it.
Hold up a second. You should have done some research. This guy's right here.
Oh, I was featured in Time.
Pretend like you've seen some of the show.
Shit on me.
So, friend of Todd Glass. Not really. Vin Forte.
Hey.
Aren't you also on Cartoon Follies?
Cartoon Buffoons.
Animation Procrastinate.
I literally thought it was called the Animation Station.
Today is... Well, here's what happened. If you're a PCMC fan, and I know you are, a couple months ago, I forced Emilio Sparks to watch Star Wars The Last Jedi.
You really didn't force me.
Well,
you've making a pun.
It was a little difficult to convince...
I remember you saying you hated Rey. You had emotions. You had feelings.
Fucking can't stand
Well,
Rey.
To be a good friend, I decided that I would watch something you like. I watched Knickers Present WrestleMania 34.
I'm glad you did.
It'd be interesting to see, because I got back into wrestling a couple years ago, and around 2013, 2014. And around that time, I think a lot of people have gotten back into it in the past couple of years, but I don't think they've gotten back into it quite in this way, where they jump into a 7-hour WrestleMania event.
Yeah.
Like, you usually hear a lot of people now saying, oh, I don't like the WWE product, so I, tried Ring of Honor, I watched some New Japan, and that's how I got back into it. There's a lot out there right now. You could easily make the argument that, from a fan perspective, it's way better now than it was back when it was just WCW as a competition.
But the funny thing is this, though. He's never even watched it when there was competition, when there was ECW, when there was WCW.
Right.
He's never even stepped foot into an indie.
Remember, we were all together last on PCMC.
Go to iTunes. You can download Pop Culture Man Children.
Absolutely. That was the Last Jedi episode. And
we talked about Star Wars.
Yes. We were kind of joking about how maybe The Last Jedi isn't the first Star Wars movie for Emilio to see in a theater.
Yeah.
Would you feel that it's similarly weird that I jump back in to really watching wrestling with Snickers Presents WrestleMania 34?
No, because here's why.
Was tedious at times.
Well, listen, here's why. Because they show the promo packages leading up to it. So if you don't watch... You can understand what's going on. This is the good guy. That's the bad guy.
Not the drama.
They're going to fight for something. There's something on the line.
Yeah.
So the promo package is going to put it into a nice little bow, and it's going to send it off to you, and then you understand, okay, I understand what the conflict is going to be.
Yes.
I wouldn't say it's the best place, but I would say that there's enough variation on a WrestleMania card where if you told me like the top three matches that you liked, I could point you in the direction of something that you would really like.
There's one match that I really liked. What match do you think it was?
The Ronda Rousey match.
No.
Although I like that one.
I'm going to say, okay.
Oh, wait. Plugging in
because he is a feminist.
I
might say that it was Asuka and Charlotte, but I don't think so. I think it was the Braun Strowman and Nicholas.
Yes.
No.
No?
Really?
No.
Why? You're such a child at heart. I would assume that Braun picking the kid to win the tag team championships would be right up your alley.
Official tag team champion.
Yeah, Nicholas. Record.
Yeah, Nicholas.
No, the one I really liked, I feel like you guys are going to be like, that was the worst one. Nia Jax versus Alexa Bliss.
You liked Nia versus Alexa?
Yeah.
Did you?
It was funny.
Mm-hmm.
It had dialogue. It had shtick. I thought it was the best performance. I enjoyed it. It was the drama of it was more than just I'm angry at you or whatever. Like, there was a betrayal there. I loved the whole thing.
Well, the whole thing of that was Nia Jax has been fat shamed.
Yes.
Like, I know.
Yeah, we call her Big Fine. So Big Fine has been fat shamed for months.
She's great.
Why was that one outside of everything you mentioned? Did you enjoy the physical storytelling?
Yes, I did. If you remember in the beginning of the match, to intimidate Alexa, Naya screams at her and like scares her, which I thought was a really funny bit. I just felt like there was more playfulness. I really enjoyed the story of that one more than some of the other ones.
Well, they did tell a story, because the way that leading up to the event with the body shaming and then the crying, and she cried on command, which is
that was really tears
just flowing down her face. Did you catch that in the promo package that they set up
before
the beginning of the matches?
I enjoyed it.
Okay.
I like when she like hulked out.
She did hulk out.
Yeah.
From start to finish, it might be one of the most interesting matches to watch that people may have really slept on, because
it was a long show.
And
it was given a death spot, if I recall.
It is the death spot.
Yeah.
It's right after Cena, Undertaker, and then it was right before Daniel Bryan and Shane versus KO and Sammy. It really was the death spot, because everybody's just waiting for Daniel to come out and make his return after 4 years of not wrestling in a WWE ring. And what they just saw, John Cena just get buried.
Yeah.
He did have the number one movie that weekend, and The Undertaker did not have the number one movie that weekend.
So do you think The Undertaker was jealous that John Cena had the number one movie in the country?
Yeah, he could have done Blockers.
You think The Undertaker could do Blockers?
No, I actually don't.
I don't think The Undertaker has the range to chug a beer from his asshole.
I've got a lot of... Look, I watched and I took a lot of notes. Some are statements, some are questions, some are just things I wondered.
Well, let's go... Before we get too into the woods bouncing around, let's start in order. Started watching, did you watch any of the pre-show?
No, I just right watched into... the main Snickers Presents.
That's fine. That's good. That's fine.
34.
Which, by the way, it should be noted, Snickers Presents, this was actually one of the lesser product placements.
Is that right?
Product placement WrestleManias. Last year, there was way more product placement. They had Shawn Michaels come out as the Colonel for KFC and do a dance. They had Dolph Ziggler fight The Miz in full Colonel regalia.
Yeah, Miz was a chicken. Dolph was the Colonel.
Wow.
There was product placement where they would drink Sonic shakes.
Yeah.
There was nobody eating Snickers.
Well,
there was commercial breaks.
Yeah, that was that like Mankind bit.
Yeah.
Whatever that. I did not get what the bit was there.
Okay, so
it was like early Saturday Night Live.
Okay, so let's go in order. Let's start with what your notes are.
So let's start the first match.
So, Seth Rollins, he's based on a Game of Thrones character?
Okay, well every year...
What's the bit there?
Every year, they have to take a couple of wrestlers and make them, do... Cool, because everyone gets the grand entrance for WrestleMania.
Yeah.
But not everybody.
Not everyone.
A select few get a grand
entrance.
Their
big stars get a grand entrance.
The ones that make the company the most money.
Yes. And every year, a couple of them... do these, I'm inspired by what's hot in pop culture.
Yes.
And they get to wear anything that they want that is approved by the company.
Yeah.
Just throw that out there first.
And approved by HBO, I guess. He was wearing blue.
He's wearing blue contacts.
Contacts.
That magically disappeared before the match.
I thought that, too. Where'd they go?
They were digitally added.
Oh, my God. Winter's coming. Yep. That's not his usual shtick?
No, his usual shtick is CrossFit Jesus.
So then why? But what do we gain from?
Because it's just a cool entrance.
Yeah, it is. It was just him.
And he's a cool guy.
Yeah, he's wearing the Winter Is Coming gear.
He's an atheist, so I don't know.
He's one of the best wrestlers in the company.
Is he?
Yeah, he's great.
He felt like an opener.
He's not an opener at all. He's a former 2-time world heavyweight champion.
Yeah, he opened. He didn't close.
You know what? The opening match now at WrestleMania is not. It doesn't have the connotation that it once did.
Yeah, you don't, you're on first. No, now it's like you want to go on first because that crowd is on pins and needles before the first chime of a theme song.
So that's like
hits.
The new, Intercontinental, this was the Intercontinental.
Mm-hmm. And it was a rebirth of the Intercontinental Championship as well, because there was a latency period where it was stagnant. And you had a guy who walked in dressed as Naruto, The Miz. He really brought the championship back to prominence, but I feel, and maybe Vin can agree with this, that The Miz has hit a ceiling.
Yeah.
And now needs to go above and beyond and now go into the main event picture for the Universal Championship. But you have to give the next guy the belt. So you have to, quote unquote, maybe put the other guy over and give him the torch.
Uh-huh.
And that is the belt. So now Miz elevated the belt as high as he can get it. Now you have two athletes like Seth Rollins and Finn Balor who can go.
Yeah.
Now it's like, I will let them battle for it now.
When you're watching this, right, do you know what the outcomes are going to be?
No. And you don't want to know.
I would imagine you don't want to know, but I just wondered if you do.
Well, sometimes, and this is more with wrestling in general, not so much with WWE, because WWE is based on the whims of one man. You know, sometimes they'll swerve you, but sometimes it can be good to sort of see where things are going and, like, have an expectation that, oh, it seems like they're giving this guy the rub right now. But in the case of this specific match, it could have gone either way to Seth Rollins or Finn Balor. Like, they're both pretty deserving.
How were you happy with the outcome? I'm not going to remember any of the outcomes, by the way.
Yeah, I was. I thought it was the right move.
Okay.
I thought it was the right move because they're real big on milestones and accomplishments. And, you know, for X amount of years, Seth Rollins has been with the company now. He's had a meteoric rise rather quickly. Yeah. He won his first championship at WrestleMania 31. And he just won his Grand Slam, which means he's held every championship. Secondary and tertiary at WrestleMania 34.
So what I was watching, more than trying to understand what I was watching, I was trying to engage with what a fan would engage with, because I'm very interested in fandom. So I kept thinking, what would a fan be doing? What would the reaction be right now from a fan? So when you see someone win, right, and you didn't know who was going to win, and then they win, do you then go, I know the next couple narrative beats that are going to happen?
Well, there's definitely a rematch. You know that's going to happen somewhere
down
the
line. And they've already, like, started teasing that.
Yeah.
Okay.
So
you get the sense, whenever there's an outcome, especially like this, that, like, because this was a three-way. So clearly this was meant to take the belt off The Miz and give it to one of these two guys.
Yeah.
And now that's setting up basically above the championship itself. This match was to pass the torch from The Miz being Intercontinental Champion to now setting up a program with Finn Balor and Seth Rollins. So it didn't really it didn't matter which one of the two got the belt.
I'm just wondering where you as fans, part of this fan community, if you go, okay, I see the move here and I see what will come.
Well, it's just how Vin explained it. We don't know what the outcome will be. We don't even know if they're going to play hot potato with the championship.
Give me an example.
Go ahead.
Let's say I'm watching an episode of Star Wars Rebels, and it ends where Kanan Jarrus, voiced by the inimitable Freddie Prinze Jr.,
I have no idea who
picks
these people
up
are.
A kyber crystal. I would go, okay, in the next episode, somebody's going to be making a new lightsaber. Right?
Oh, okay.
I would
now,
see where it's going. You know what I mean? I'm wondering how much. I'm really interested in your engagement.
To a certain extent, especially when it comes to the WWE, fans seem to really like it, and I would agree, when plans are set in motion, and as those plans are being carried out, they start to solidify in a very specific way.
Mm-hmm.
And once those plans start to solidify, fans get a better sense of, like, oh, okay, they're angling for this person to go in this direction or this person to go in this direction. Sometimes you can swerve people, but that has to be done very delicately and with specific purpose. And we'll get to this in the main event. The main event was something where this was, like, 3 years in the making, and nobody likes Roman Reigns, and people are sick of Brock Lesnar.
Mm-hmm.
And people were just like, we all had in our head, like, okay, Brock Lesnar's going to leave for the UFC, Roman Reigns is going to win the championship, and we could finally be done with this whole ordeal and move on to something else. But instead, now Brock Lesnar retains the championship, and all of a sudden it's like, well, you swerved us, and you're still fucking us over.
Yeah.
Because
fucking us over, I think, is a strong term.
It's a strong word, but
I don't think they're going to fuck us over. I think
no.
What we're getting,
what we're getting
in terms of swerve is smart, because all these schmarmy, schnananar, neckbeardy marks thought, oh, well, the Golden Goose is going to win the championship.
Right.
And then when that didn't happen, they were complaining that he didn't win.
Well,
because of the storyline.
Well, that's an interesting situation. Again, that specific feud is an interesting situation. Because it comes down to business.
Yeah, but in terms of what you're talking about in The Miz, Seth Rollins, and Finn Balor, no. I think what you're going to see is you're going to see excitement for a belt that has, and Vin could maybe agree or disagree with me, has become the title on that particular program, which is the Raw brand for WWE.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, because they built it up as like this workhorse title where the people in the mix for it are like Seth Rollins and Finn Balor, where, you know, they're these guys that, you know, maybe some people in the company look at them less so with Seth Rollins and think, you know, okay, this is not a quote-unquote main eventer or, like, a heavyweight guy, mm-hmm. but they're, you know, like the Shawn Michaels or Daniel Bryan or Bret Hart type, where they're thinner, they're more agile, they're doing more, lack of a better way of putting it, they're doing more flippy shit.
Yeah.
Flippy shit.
Flippy
yeah.
shit.
I yeah. really enjoyed when the gentleman would, like, dive out of the ring. That was my favorite.
Well, they all did that.
Yeah, but I really... That's like a thing now. Some of them do it really, like, good. Beautifully.
Finn Balor has an amazing...
He looks so much like John Mulaney, doesn't he?
So let's move away from the opening match. What'd you think of the second match?
You're going to have to...
What are your notes?
My notes are just random music.
Can I see your
pull
notes?
Pull up on Wikipedia, like, the
Look, lesson. I wrote, I like when they jump out. I wrote, my favorite sign was the sign that said, it's my birthday. Well, who won? No,
pull up on Wikipedia, kids. WrestleMania 34.
Do you really want to go through every one? Why don't we jump around?
Again, what is on the notes outside of, it's my birthday, and I like the way they dive?
I wrote, I think I'd enjoy wrestling more if it were more insane. Here's a question. Why does Ronda Rousey dress like Roddy Piper?
Before Roddy Piper died, he gave her his blessing.
Okay, wait, right. No, wait, 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 wait.
That
wait,
opens
wait.
More questions.
Okay, no.
It does.
Even in UFC, Ronda Rousey's fight name was Rowdy Ronda Rousey because yeah. growing up she was a professional wrestling fan.
An alliteration.
And Roddy Piper was her favorite wrestler.
So, but how now does she get to use his costume and name?
You know, Piper had a shirt that said, you know, Rowdy.
Yeah, yeah.
Back in the 80s, and they're now...
Keeping it alive.
They're keeping it alive, and they're making more money selling it. So
is that good? Is that good branding for her?
I think it's excellent branding because, one, it keeps a legend who passed away far too young in the thoughts
but
and
that
the
keep
culture.
Her in his shadow?
No, not at all.
Especially not after this match.
But you also got to remember, too, though, she's coming in with a reputation for being one of the most badass athletes
yeah.
in the planet.
Right. Well, she was at some point.
At one point, she was. Yeah, everybody talked about her.
Yeah,
she was on the cover of Sports Illustrated. She was on the cover of ESPN. She was in GQ. I mean, she was everywhere.
Yeah.
She was in The Expendables with Sly and Mel.
Yeah.
She was in Entourage. So there was one point where she was a
but,
media
like, she's
darling.
Not, but why doesn't she have her own gimmick?
I think eventually
she
will.
I see her and I feel like, and I see a spinoff. I'm like, yeah. You're Star Trek The Next Generation.
She's not Star Trek The Next Generation.
You're, what is this?
This is what she liked. This is what she wanted to emulate. She wanted to emulate.
Do you think she'll keep doing that or she'll eventually?
No, I think they'll sell the t-shirt until they can't sell it no more. And then once they sell that t-shirt, they're going to do something different because it's all about the greenbacks.
They have a years-long plan for her.
Yeah, so. She ain't going nowhere. And the best part about this is she's actually a full-time contracted WWE superstar.
Right.
So you just don't get her for WrestleMania and then 6 months she pops up for SummerSlam.
No, this is what she does now. This is her job now.
Yes, it is. And she did it really, really well. And I like the fact that she's paying homage to Roddy Piper, who I think without Roddy Piper and Hulk Hogan, WrestleMania 1 wouldn't have been as successful as it was. But that's something I'm literally talking about.
I never saw Snickers
this is
for WrestleMania 1.
No, Snickers didn't present WrestleMania 1.
Oh, no?
No, nobody presented WrestleMania 1.
Really?
Yeah. For the first few years, it was just the WWE presents WrestleMania.
Okay.
It didn't become big business until maybe like, what, 10?
Yeah.
After WrestleMania 10, it became big business?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Okay.
One of the first ones that really caught my attention was Karate Fighters. Sponsoring certain WWE pay-per-views.
What?
Remember the toy from Milton Bradley, the Karate Fighters?
Where they were just like...
They were Rock'em Sock'em robots with very loose articulation, and then you would put them on a device that would twist them and turn them, and they would look like they would have a seizure.
Oh,
and then if
that.
You were to hit the center medallion piece
yeah.
on each of the fighter, and they came off the control stick,
yeah, I remember that.
You would
yeah,
win.
There were a million like licensed variations for like every...
I
Boys
do remember
prop.
That.
They had zip pads at one point. Do you remember the Stridex?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, Stridex presents WrestleMania. That was a fun one.
Chef Boyardee?
Yeah, that's right. I remember those commercials with like the Hardy Boys.
1-800-COLLECT?
Yes.
There was a whole bunch. Y2J Stinger? Remember that energy drink? Did you like the Ronda Rousey match?
I like the female matches better. I feel like with the male matches, it's all like... I'm big and strong, and you're big and strong, and I hate you, and I'm calling you out or whatever. But I feel like there's more narrative there for the ones with the females in it. they play different emotions other than angry.
There's a strong possibility that the main event of next WrestleMania is going to be the first female main event.
Really?
So I think that says a lot about where the women's division is at right now.
Well, you also saw something that you haven't seen in a while. And, I mean, it did go into Becky Lynch versus James Ellsworth at one point in a mixed tag match. But you finally got to see a Titan versus a Titan. You got to see Triple H and Ronda Rousey actually throw hands in a WWE ring, because intergender anything in WWE doesn't really exist, because it's not that they will keep the worlds separate, but I think because of corporate sponsors coming in, they don't want it to look like it could be something that simulates domestic violence.
Yeah, that's the kind of lose-lose, because on the one hand, you want to say, hey, we're woke, we have intergendered wrestling. But on the other hand, it's like, yeah, but do you really want to put a man hitting a woman on TV? So you're right. It's a kind of hard. Either way, you kind of lose.
Well, that's why, like, the only times they've ever done that is if it's, for lack of a better way of putting it, like a manly woman. Like when it's China,
She wins, or like when she's kicking,
or a demasculated man like James Ellsworth, This one, it was different because I think you have Ronda Rousey, who comes in with the merit of being a former UFC champion.
Well, that's exactly it.
And I think you put her against arguably, you know, top 10 in the company against Triple H, and you will see that it'll be done in a different way where it's not one-sided, where the man is going to overpower the woman because she's a man. Mm. You get to see that the woman is actually throwing some shots and is overpowering the man.
Yeah, yeah.
And essentially, it is a form of toxic masculinity, because it takes the man to get the woman over who's doing the dominating move.
Right.
If we really want to construct and deconstruct gender roles within professional wrestling, or just how the media portrays gender roles, I mean, that's a perfect case study right there.
Yeah.
But in terms of, the crowd was just hot. A lot of people were skeptical about her wrestling. A lot. Because I knew, like, what she was capable of doing. And look who she's been training with. She trained with Kurt Angle.
Brian Kendrick.
She trained with Brian Kendrick. She's worked with Sarah Amato. I mean, these are teachers who, this is what they do. Yeah. You know? And Sarah Amato is responsible for every crop of woman wrestler that comes out in WWE and kills it.
Yeah.
Specifically the Four Horsewomen.
Mm-hmm.
So, and what's going on with Asuka and Ember Moon and Shayna Baszler? I mean, you have a really core group of tough women who are finally, like, they're saying, okay, this is not a bathroom break anymore. It you know.
Right, it used to be a bathroom break.
You know, listen, before, you know, WrestleMania 32 in Dallas, everybody would just be like, I'm not watching this. It had a connotation where it was just going to be bikinis and prettiness. And that was it. And then they changed, and then they got hit with the times, because I think the indie culture definitely dictated, like, okay, we have women wrestling dudes, and we have women putting on really good matches. Now it's time for us to step it up, because we got more than just pretty faces. We got women that can actually work.
That's what I'm saying. It goes back to what I've been saying for the past, you know, couple years now, that, you know, the independent circuit, all these, you know, smaller promotions that aren't WWE, have really set the table and set the tone for, like, what's going on right now, to the point where WWE, you know, they're progressing, they're moving forward, but to a certain extent, they're trying to play catch up with everyone else.
Right. They're still behind on certain things.
They're the biggest company, and it's great. Believe me, it's amazing that they're doing any of this at all.
Right.
Because they totally could be resting on their laurels and not doing anything.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, it's amazing that we even get, like, you mentioned you like the more story-driven aspects of the matches. You would probably really like NXT TakeOver, which was the show that was on the night before. That is it's literally 2 hours and 59 minutes. Very story-driven. They had a really crazy match to start out with, which was a six-man ladder match with some of the hottest independent stars that they've just...
Oh, we're losing him right now.
Okay, but there's a match at the end.
I just took a cyanide pill.
Michael, what else did you like? What else are in these notes?
Okay, so this is kind of a Norm Macdonald joke. You know, guys, I don't think these referees are very thorough. They let a lot of stuff go.
Yes, they do.
It's very easy to get around them behind them and do some shenanigans that's not legal.
Isn't that amazing, though?
79,000 people or whatever. You think someone would have noticed?
I mean, where do they get these guys?
They find them. I think the referees do an exceptional job.
It's like their children are in the matches.
Right?
What else do I got?
He didn't pick up on that, Vin.
No. I love when they lay down long enough to do an instant replay.
Well, that's called a rest hold. They need that.
Yeah, yeah. It's like everyone stop acting for a minute. Everyone just roll around.
Oh, it's even worse if you go see like one of the live TV tapings for like Raw or SmackDown, because then you have whole commercial breaks where they just have to keep them in the rest hold.
Oh, really?
And you're just sitting in the crowd just watching them do nothing.
Oh,
especially when they go to commercial, yeah.
That's terrible.
I mean, I like that that's out of the whole thing, mm-hmm. out of this whole event,
yeah.
the Super Bowl of professional wrestling, the mm-hmm. World Series of professional wrestling, a lot of people's Easter and Christmas rolled into one.
Sure.
You're looking at one who bases his whole physical calendar year on this one event for professional wrestling.
Yeah.
That's what you really come up with? What's up with the rest holds?
Well, you know, medium is the message, and I couldn't help but be watching the entire spectacle as a constructed text. So, you know, you're more interested in, like, the little narratives going on where I was sort of – I was a little bit more distant from it going – I'm interested in the production value. I'm interested in how they play.
Okay,
things.
So you're watching it from – you're interested in the nuance of the actual event being produced as an event.
Yeah, I'm interested in like the ads they do. I'm interested in all the effects. I'm interested in, you know, when they're going to, you know, show a trailer for Andre the Giant. I'm interested in when they're going to do a Snickers commercial.
Did you enjoy how the commentators would – they carry the show.
Oh, yeah.
Because they're the ones that narrate and tell us the story.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
What did you think of that in terms of storytelling and moving the storyline forward each match?
You know, the commentator will make an inference based on what they think is happening, but it's a way of also giving the audience that information. Like, I think John Cena just heard this thing, and it's like, you're giving that to me. Yeah, it's sort of like... It reminded me of in the early days of silent movies. Sometimes they'd have someone stand next to the screen and actually speak and like narrate the movie to people. So it kind of reminded me of that.
Well, what'd you think of, because you brought it up, the John Cena Undertaker stuff?
Yeah, I've got a few questions about Undertaker. All right, within the narrative world of WWE, like, what is the Undertaker? Does he have a house?
He's a walking Maccabee.
But, like,
yeah,
what is he in... Okay, so he's...
He lives in the ground.
So he's a dead man in the narrative world of WWE. He's like a zombie.
I wouldn't say a zombie. I think he has
what
more...
What does he do when he's not wrestling, though?
That's a good... Nobody
he rides
knows.
Motorcycles.
Maybe. He works out. Hangs out with his wife. Maybe orders
so
dominoes.
So he has a wife. So, like, he's a person... In WWE?
No, he's not. He's a person outside.
That's what I'm interested within.
But he was a biker at one point.
Which I thought they were going to bring back.
Yeah.
Because it would have been the smart move.
He used magic to appear.
He always uses magic.
This is my question. Now I'm asking a question.
Right, if he can use magic, why doesn't he just shoot lightning at John
Cena? Or why is he not like a supervillain? Why is wrestling the only thing he does when he's not dead? See, this is now I'm asking a question within the narrative world of WWE. I was like, okay, in the narrative world, like... You've got people who, you know, I've got all these different narratives going on of like, this one's mad at this one.
You want to know the real answer?
Yeah.
It's called The Undertaker premiered in, what, like 1991 at a time where they kept really hokey gimmicks and nobody at that time expected him to last like 30 years.
He's
okay,
the
well,
last.
That leads me to another question.
He's the last of that whole Vince McMahon wanted you to have a gimmick and we're going to live the gimmick. And even when they would build elaborate sets for photos mm-hmm. and other vignettes backstage, like there would be like a funeral parlor for him or a workshop.
Whatever happened to Paul Bearer?
He's
Morta.
He's dead in real life?
He's
really dead. Well, in kayfabe, there was a point where he was buried in cement, but that's a whole other
thing. That's a whole other thing.
What did you just say? In what?
He was
kayfabe.
Buried in...
What's that?
Oh, kayfabe is basically the suspension of disbelief.
What does kayfabe mean, though?
It means keeping it in the family. You took a blood oath.
Oh.
There was some blood on a mask card. You took an oath.
Huh.
So it's like, it's the whole thing of like, these wrestlers hate each other. We recognize that they hate each other.
You don't drive in the same cars. You don't go and eat together in the same restaurants afterwards.
But as a fan, like, we know that's all in kayfabe because in real life, like in kayfabe, they hate each other. In real life, we know they're probably buddies.
Yeah. I see. How old is he? Because he's looking
53.
He looks old.
He's very old. He was,
he
but he was old.
He's been around so long.
He's been old since 1991. He looked better this year than he did last year, and he looked even better this year than he did when he fought Brock.
Yeah.
Has he ever appeared in a movie?
Yes. Suburban Commando.
What, did he speak in that?
No, he just played one of the bounty hunters.
So, what's his retirement plan?
Oh, he's got money. He's good.
Yeah.
Is he going to keep wrestling for a very long time?
There's actually an article.
Winding down?
It's funny.
Well, he retired. He quote-unquote retired last year at WrestleMania.
Okay.
Though it wasn't explicitly said he retired, but like...
He made a symbolic gesture.
He lost a match and he like put his hat and his coat in the ring, which is why when you saw it this year, the hat and the coat were in the ring and they got destroyed by lightning.
Yeah, yeah.
He hasn't wrestled since last WrestleMania.
So we thought because he did the symbolic gesture of his coat and his hat and his gloves in the middle of the ring, we thought, well, maybe they would resurrect him as the Biker Undertaker, a.k.a. Big Evil. And he would come out and he would be less stoic, and he wouldn't as walk as slow. You know, he wouldn't have a methodical pace to him, but he would actually come out and be more of a human because
less
he did
Michael
that.
Myers.
Yes, less Michael Myers, more Jax Teller from Sons of Anarchy.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
But we didn't get that. We got the Walking Maccabee. So in the realm of The Undertaker, no, we don't know what The Undertaker does. We don't know if he eats Domino's. We don't know if he walks the dog. We don't know any of these things because we don't know his life.
My question is this, and again, this is about fandom engagement. Is the fan supposed to be engaged in the behind the scenes that you really know what's happening, or is the fan supposed to be engaged in just a narrative, or is like for a little kid, does a little kid believe everything they're seeing?
The best way I could it's twofold. The first is back in the day before there was internet, you could keep kayfabe alive,
right? And you believed it, and it was all
people would take separate.
It doesn't exist.
No way for it to exist now.
Wasn't there a story of a plane crash where there were good guys and bad guys, and they fucking in the hospital they had to separate people because even though this guy like broke his leg, they didn't want to.
Yeah, it was Ric Flair's.
But so that's how it used to be. Now with the internet, most fans treat it like you would treat. Like a Game of Thrones or any other show, where it's like you recognize, we treat it like a fiction.
But you also have to keep in mind, though,
Kids too. What are little kids?
No, well, I think little kids are just going to think of it as good versus evil, and you know this man has magical mystical powers. I think it's under a microscope even more because you have dirt sheets and everybody's a goddamn critic now on Twitter.
What I'm saying. But look.
That's what they're into now,
though. That's
what
a fan engagement.
But here's the thing, though. They're more into that now, where they want to know about The Undertaker. They want to know what his shit smells like on a Thursday morning.
You know, look, we all like behind-the-scenes stuff of the things we do. We like to see how the tie is made.
But this doesn't allow that, though, because you have to understand it's such a guarded, insulated lifestyle that if you're an outsider, you shouldn't know what goes on in certain things.
Well, on WrestleRap, do you talk about like rumors and storyline ideas that you think are going to happen?
We talk about storyline ideas. No, we don't do spoilers. We don't like to do that. We feel that is that's a little sheepish and that's a clickbait kind of thing.
People know, like, they know where the spoilers are.
Yeah, we don't do that. We like to have an open discussion about, hey, this is what we would like to see. You know, it's like something like when you would see on episodic television. Like when we analyze something, we'll talk about it. We'll be like, hey, you know, it would be cool if they did it this way. You know, or how would you feel if this one came into this scenario? That's what we do. We don't like to, as we like to call them, to be clickbait, you know, puppets.
Yeah.
That's just gaining an audience just for the sake of saying, hey, this one did this. This was said backstage. Like, we don't like that because you don't know whether or not that's true or false.
Right.
And I think that's totally disrespectful to the people that do the craft, whether it's WWE, whether it's New Japan, whether it's ROH, whether it's AAW, whether it's Smash Wrestling, whether it's Shimmer. I don't want to do spoilers or do giveaways. I want to know about what's going on in the ring. And if I interview you face-to-face as a wrestler, and if you want to tell me about your personal life, then you're going to do so. But I'm not going to try to drag it out of you just in hopes to put it on YouTube or for the sake of our show to further my career in any way.
But I will say there is a bigger understanding now by wrestlers. And some wrestlers are doing more to let people in on that world and understand, like, okay, here are the hardships that we go through. Like, maybe in the past you thought, you know, okay, everyone's a millionaire if you see him on the TV.
Right.
Like, I was telling you the other day, Colt Cabana just revamped his podcast, The Art of Wrestling, where it's now, like, this documentary style.
Right.
Where he basically, like, on the trips he's been going on, he'll whip out his iPhone and just start, like, talking to other wrestlers. Mm. It's this really candid, like, fly on the wall. And I've listened to, like, every episode.
Yeah, but that's the thing, though. He's allowing you.
He's controlling it.
Everybody thinks they can paint, so they're going to try to take the brush.
Yeah.
Well, you can't do it. I've never bumped into 20 by 20. I've watched it since I'm a kid. But I'm not going to sit here and construct it and deconstruct it in a negative way because I think, oh, well, that rest hold was far too long, or right, the pacing of this match was sloppy.
Plus, I disagree. Well, not that I'm not specifically about wrestling, but I think criticism is a good thing.
It is.
And I don't think it's necessarily hateful.
I think what Emilio is referring to is because you can criticize a match or a product or what have you, but a lot of the critiques are going in the wrong direction, where if you see two people duke it out and there's a bad outcome or the pacing is off, you know, it's probably more the booker's fault than the actual wrestler.
And the in thing now is to call that out. That's the thing where you want to gain a following because of the negativity. Instead of actually just constructing or deconstructing something from a fan's perspective, you want to do it in a snobbish, boorish kind of way because you know that there is an audience out there that wants that.
Because here's the thing, there's, like I was saying before, there's so much out there right now that you could love. And, you know, even within companies, like, you might only like a couple feuds that are going on, but they may really, you know, pique your interest. So you could take that two ways. You could sit around and go, well, you know, WWE sucks. I hate WWE. You could do a whole podcast about how WWE sucks. Mm-hmm. Or, like, what I do is when it's not good, guess what? I don't watch it, and I watch something else that I do like.
Yeah.
And when New Japan Pro Wrestling is not so great, you know, I think it's great a lot of the time, but, you know, I'm not blind to the fact that there are some issues. You know, guess what? I don't watch it.
Exactly.
When they're in their lean periods. Mm-hmm. ROH, I don't think, is doing so hot right now in terms of, you know, unless you're in the Bullet Club, you know, you're getting kind of passed over. And you know, I choose not to support that kind of attitude in the company.
I just don't choose to just support any type of negative attitude when it comes off in a rather vicious way, where you're not reviewing the product because of your fandom, but you're reviewing the product because you really just want to shit on something.
Right.
That's what the social media in general has done now. It's created a lane and an opportunity to do so.
Well, because WrestleMania wasn't even half over, and I was showing you tweets and Facebook messages from people that are like, this is the worst fucking WrestleMania ever. I didn't like the outcome of that match. It's like, well, you know, did you like it up until that point? Because then you got, like, if a match was a half hour long, 29 of those 30 minutes you really enjoyed.
It's like the neckbeards with Last Jedi, who are like, this is the worst Star Wars ever. It's that kind of fandom.
It's like, things can have good things and bad things in them.
Right.
Half of it is for you, half of it's not going to be for you.
Yes.
But you have to finish the journey before you say this is the worst one ever, because guess what? There's always going to be something else that's the worst one ever.
That, and especially something like WrestleMania. I think some people have an idea in their head that because it's quote-unquote WrestleMania, it is the best show of the year. And by best show of the year, I mean it is exactly what you've been looking forward to. And that, I don't think, could be any further from the truth. WrestleMania is specifically designed for a mainstream audience. It's specifically designed to get the most eyes on the product during that time. There's going to be stuff you like about it. There's going to be stuff you don't like about it. Chances are the best pay-per-view of the year for you specifically, any singular person, is going to be, like, I would say probably like a much leaner pay-per-view that has things that are more targeted.
Well, see, that's the thing. It is a business to get the new eyes and to get the casual fan who may tune in once in a blue moon to come and watch. You know, it's the reason why ESPN and all these other, you know, e-entertainment news and Access Hollywood now are starting to get more of a behind-the-scenes access to highlight what professional wrestling is, because they're showing it as an entertainment. So if we're watching this specific thing, mm-hmm. WrestleMania, as what it is, right? And your crown jewel, and one of the things, is Ronda Rousey. And that's the focal point to get other eyes onto your product that you've never seen before, right? You're going to run with that. Now, that's not to say that Ronda's good, bad, or indifferent. No, what it shows is that this, we know what we're doing. This is entertainment. WrestleMania hasn't been the big blow-off show where you reset for the next physical year for storylines. No, they don't need to do that anymore. I thought WrestleMania told a really good story from an entertainment standpoint where if you're not a fan like Mike, you can come in and watch and then you can be like, wow, you know what? They kind of left this open-ended. They really didn't finish this. Okay, that has to be finished. So you have all these questions. So that way, if you want to tune in next time, guess what? It did its job.
Yeah. Can I ask you a question? This is you. I'm not a fan, and for any of the
You've never watched professional wrestling before, so it's not your cup of tea.
So yeah, okay. So for any of the pop culture man babies out there who are like me and they want to get into it, I'm not asking where to start. I'm asking how to start, because this is, and I mean this not as an insult. When I watch, I kind of go, what am I supposed to be feeling? Like, if I believed it all, I could see being excited about that. But I know that it's not, and now it's entertainment, so there's not even a conceit about it not being, you know what I mean? So it's like, why am I excited? Because, like, you go, well, then it's fiction, but it's still live, and it's presenting itself as something. Well, I don't know. Well, I don't know how you're supposed to enjoy it.
Well, I can answer that. And the answer really is investment. They need to hook you where it's telling a good story. Like you said before, the match for you of the night is probably the Nia Jax match.
Yeah.
Because even with just the promo package, it told a story. And you invested in that story.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, the main event probably didn't hold your interest in terms of a story because it was big guy versus big guy.
Oh, that was Roman Reigns?
Yeah.
Yeah, actually, I wrote down the main event bored me.
Yeah, and that's a match where arguably, if you're someone new, you're seeing guys slamming each other through tables, guys bleeding.
Yeah, yeah.
That should theoretically be exciting. But no, the Nia Jax match was more exciting because it had a story behind it. Now,
if you're not into story, it feels like very repetitive physical movements.
And that's why a lot of people have gravitated towards places like New Japan, places like Ring of Honor, a lot of independent scenes, because they have a lot more creative freedom. They're not as shackled by the whims of the WWE. So you have something like I was showing you off mic with the Golden Lovers in New Japan right now, where you have these stories that have multiple threads that you can pick up years later and build off of. So there is all this narrative story to play with.
Yeah, and but they did that with Roman and Brock,
too. They did that with Roman and Brock, but I'm saying, like, if you're someone who normally would not be entranced by something like WrestleMania or that type of product, and you're looking for something a little more narrative, like, it does exist out there in a way that it didn't exist even, like, 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Now, you said the main event for the Universal Championship between Brock Lesnar and Roman Reigns bored you. Now, did it bore you because the physical aspect of their storytelling just didn't grab you? Was it too, what is known in the business as Haas style? Was it too hard-hitting for you? Did it not have a ballet to
did the,
it?
Did the crowd kill it for you? Because the crowd can raise up an okay match and kill a different.
Well, that crowd was just going to be anti that main event anyway, because I don't think they fancy themselves Brock or Roman guys.
But that's the thing. You watch a match like that and you're also now hearing the crowd going, boring, this is awful, they're chanting for CM Punk, like, they're throwing beach ball mania in the crowd.
Because going into it, they already have their minds made up that they're not going to like this just because, the internet has dictated it in the past and we feel cheated and slighted because this is what they've been doing for years and this guy is a part-time champion.
And that's a whole different argument about the fans making their voices heard and should they listen.
But it's been the same thing for years now. You know, almost two calendar years, Brock Lesnar has been a facet with this championship that's still in its infancy that they're trying to get over and have some type of panache and prestige for. So for the last 2.5 years, you've been saying, oh, he's part-time. Oh, then they're going to give the golden calf, Roman Reigns, they're going to push him to the moon. And then we're going to see this, and it's going to be shoved down our throats over and over again. So the fans are already going to, the fickle fans, I should say, go into it, already with a preconceived judgment that I'm not going to like this match because it's these two guys.
Okay. I don't have that behind-the-scenes hate for what they're doing in the company. And maybe because I'm not that aware of what the narrative is between the two guys. It just felt banal to me. I wish I could say, like, I hated it. But I didn't. It was more just like...
It was boring?
Yeah, it was kind of like, all right. Like, and I don't know.
Did the blood entice you a little bit?
Yeah, that was interesting. I was like, okay, this is something I haven't seen in the last 3 hours. I enjoyed that.
Because that was a legitimate shot he took to the
head. Yes, absolutely. I guess I was saying to myself, like, why is this the last thing?
Again, has to do with the runtime and how many matches are on the card. Because you've seen so much at that point that two guys just coming out and
right.
punching each other is not...
Is it always this long? Is it always...
WrestleMania? Yes.
Yes, yeah. But a typical pay-per-view, no.
Okay.
Typical pay-per-view is like 3 hours?
Yeah, 2:45.
For as much as you could hate on certain aspects of it, you will find something to like. Like, if you don't like something on the main roster, NXT is probably your cup of tea.
And if you don't like NXT, there's guys that wrestle under 205 pounds. Yeah, and if you don't like that, then there is the whole idea of British strong style and British wrestling. There's a little bit of everything.
Make no mistake, this was their most profitable year ever.
$900 million.
The entire year, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
From what is that revenue?
Network subscriptions, from
merchandising, live events, to I guess maybe even outside sponsors, television deals that certain wrestlers have appeared on.
And here's the thing: they currently broadcast on USA Network.
Uh-huh.
That deal is up, I think, next year, year after. And there's currently a very strong rumor that they might be moving to Fox.
There's a bidding war.
Channel 5 in New York.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, there's a bidding war for them. Because they know, listen, USA Network gives WWE 6 or 7 hours. It's a layup. Outside of reruns of Modern Family and Chrisley Knows Best, what eyes are actually going on USA Network?
Right.
You know what I mean? Yeah, so they're responsible for...
Remember the USA Afternoon cartoon train? Remember?
I remember that. I also remember Up All Night. Remember Up All Night with Rhonda Shear, where she would air these really cheesy B-rate and C-rate movies.
Remember Duckman?
Yeah, I do. What about Weird Science?
Remember Silk Stockings?
Yeah.
Silk Stockings was good. There was a lot of interesting...
It was great back then.
There was.
Yeah, Weird Science.
La Femme Nikita?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, La Femme Nikita.
Absolutely. With Peter Wilson?
Yes.
There's a whole lot of goodness on there, but now it kind of changed, and they're responsible for it. It's like the same reason why, you know, a lot of stations will pick up baseball games, because, you know, there's a whole lot of baseball to be played within, you know, the short amount of time, and it's an easy network filler where they don't have to worry about filling content. And I think the WWE, if they do decide to move, it would be smart, because now you're getting Raw on Fox, and then you might be getting SmackDown on FS1. And FS1 is really building up their combat sports network. They have all this UFC programming, so it would, all right, I want to keep this all under the same house. And it's smart, because now you're getting a lot of UFC crossover appeal. Dana White was at WrestleMania.
Yeah.
Cain Velasquez has been at...
Shayna Baszler's on it.
Shayna Baszler. So you have a lot of crossover appeal, and to house it all in one area, I think, is really smart. So
I couldn't agree more, fellas.
So overall...
Yeah.
Would you watch professional wrestling again? Or would you even attend a wrestling event?
I would probably attend one. Just for the, you know, the fun of being there in person. Would I watch it again? Only if you asked me.
It sounds about fair.
Yeah. If you would be willing to go to a live show, Emilio, I think I got the perfect one. Are you thinking what I'm thinking? Kaiju Big Battelle.
Yes. Oh, my God. Yeah.
Wait, is there an actual kaiju? Does he come out of the sea?
Well, Kaiju Big Battelle is a live show where they basically have wrestlers dress up as big monsters.
Yes.
And
perform on a little mini set.
Yeah, basically, like, each match.
Speaking my language.
Each match that happens, like, they sort of wheel out like a new set.
Now you guys are getting it. Now you guys are getting it.
All right, so why don't we do that one day then?
I'll do that right now.
Maybe we'll do a Wrestle Rap Live.
It's like I said in my notes, I think I'd like wrestling more if it was just fucking insane. Like, just more insane.
Well, that's Kaiju Big Battle.
I'm down for it.
All right, so we can do that. We'll go to a kaiju, and we'll see you guys there. You can let us know, hey, listen, this is when it is. Why don't you guys do a WrestleRap PCMC takeover again, and we'll go, and we'll do one.
Okay. Oh, I had one more question I forgot to ask you. At Snickers Presents WrestleMania 34, is the audience loaded? Are they drunk?
No.
Because I know they sell alcohol, but I'm wondering, you know, based on the management, sometimes they're like, yeah, keep it flowing, or sometimes they're like, nah, keep these people under. So
there is definitely a last call, I know that, but are they drunken, rowdy fans that want to storm the ring? No,
Well, New Orleans is their last call then?
You know, that's a good question.
I don't think there's ever a last call.
I don't think there's a last call there.
Well, there has to be, no, but at a sporting event, there has to be.
Oh, at a sporting event, yeah.
Yeah. But I don't think the rowdiness of the fan actually translates for something like that. I also think security's on high alert, too. Because they want everything. They don't want a negative PR backlash.
I'm sure you can't do anything stupid. I'm just wondering how much
the Louisiana State Sports Commission is.
You can't do a pile driver, but a 10-year-old can win a tag team championship.
Yep, because dreams come true at WrestleMania, Nicholas.
For more information on Pop Culture Man Children, go to the Instagram at Pop Culture Man Children. That is run... owned and operated by Michael C. Bongiorno.
Actually, Facebook owns it.
Actually, Cambridge Analytica owns it.
You know, everyone was so hard on him. You know what? I liked when that one senator was like, who's your competitor? And he couldn't have an answer. He was like, so you're a monopoly. I thought that was cool. Everyone's making fun of the old people. Anyway.
Download this podcast each and every week on iTunes. Search Pop Culture Man Children.
Subscribe and it downloads for free. It just happens right there. Shows up in your phone.
I just think that's what you should do, period. We're on Stitcher. We're on Google Play. We just need to get on the Spotify one day.
Follow me on Goodreads.
He is on Goodreads.
Ah, as Mike Bongiorno.
He reads books.
You know I do. I don't mean to brag about my lifestyle.
There you go there. It's all comics.
I did recently read Ghostbusters 101. That brought the Ghostbusters and Ghostbusters 2016 characters together. It was quite bad.
And did you review this on Goodreads?
Yeah, I gave it, I believe, 1 star.
All right, so you can go there and you can pontificate about books with Mikey C. on the Goodreads. Go and find him.
Bongiorno.
Mikey Bongiorno. Are we ready to go bye-bye?
Yes. I'm always ready to go bye-bye.
Let's go bye-bye.